Let's Talk Supply Chain Asia Pacific is not your average supply chain podcast. We feature prominent industry voices, thought-provoking commentary on news, current affairs, and the latest technologies, while connecting you to companies and innovative thinkers who are transforming supply chains in our region and across the world. Don't listen to the same old, be sparked by new ideas only on Let's Talk Supply Chain Asia Pacific.
Welcome back to another episode of Let's Talk Supply Chain Asia Pacific. My name is Jonathan Kempe. I'm your host. It's a pleasure to be with you on this, the second in our series of a 10-week deep dive into supply chain technologies, two areas that I absolutely love. Supply chains on the one side, technology on the other, and the convergence of the two. We are covering off a number of different topics. And last week, we covered off an introduction to those technologies and how you may be able to apply them effectively. Well, this week, we're talking to Anthony Miller, a noted industry commentator. You might have seen him post on LinkedIn about a range of different topics, in particular about systematization, digitalization, and platforms in supply chain. His commentary is often on point and sometimes biting, a bit difficult to swallow sometimes. But the reason for that is he's had deep domain experience and expertise. And so we appreciate his perspective in particular as he gives us a frank assessment of what is and what might be to come. So without further ado, let's meet Anthony and continue the series on supply chain technologies. Well, as we've heard from the introduction, we've got Anthony Miller joining us this week on Let's Talk Supply Chain in our Technology and Supply Chain series. I have to say, folks, I've been looking forward to this moment for some time. It's taken a while for Anthony and us to cross paths. The guy is complex to get a hold of, not for any other reason, but because he's been in transit for some time, traveling the world, doing a bunch of different amazing things. Hey, Anthony, welcome to the show. Why don't you start by filling us in on where you physically are right now and how you've got there?
Hey, Jonathan. Yeah, it took me traveling to your part of the world for us to catch up. So that's pretty interesting.
You're
right?
In ANZ. We are now physically closer than ever. Can you believe it?
Yeah, I'm over in Sydney. We decided to take some time to travel just whilst things back home allowed us to do it. So right now we're in Sydney and enjoying the tail end of the nice weather, I guess. It's been great, and it's weird coming back to somewhere I spent 3 years of my life as a tourist and knowing that I'm going to be leaving again at the end of the month. Wow. Feels very strange.
Wow, and you've flown in from Europe, is that correct? So you've come from Europe and now you're in Australia. Any immediate future plans after that?
I mean, New Zealand's close by. Oh. It's easier to get there now than it would be to come back from Europe. So maybe a trip to New Zealand's on the cards for the end of this month, maybe. Yeah.
Well, who knows? You could be all the way over here. Imagine that. Podcast in person, speaking it into existence. You might hear a future LTSC episode where the two of us can talk about a whole range of topics. But topic du jour at the moment is supply chain technologies. Why don't we just pause for a second? Because you've had pretty unique history in supply chains. So where you are right now versus where you've been, you've gone through a bunch of different changes. You've been involved at different industry levels. For the sake of our audience and those that may not know, do you want to just give us a bit of a sketch of your background, what sort of things you've been involved in the past as it relates to supply chains?
I started out working for WiseTech back in 2014. That's WiseTech Global to anyone who doesn't know them, or CargoWise, which is their product name now. WiseTech's an interesting one. Starting out there, I was in marketing, and that was my first interaction with logistics, an industry that I have since tried to leave and never managed to get away from.
You can never leave. It's like the Hotel California over here. You're never leaving.
You're always getting pulled back in. There's always something going on in logistics that makes it interesting. So I started in marketing, spent a couple of years in Sydney working with people like Vlad, who's now CXO at WiseTech. I was working with Richard and so many other people in product. And I mean, the list is too long. I've got some great friends from back then still today. It was a crazy time going through, being in a company that was going, you know, through the IPO and all of that. It was like an accelerated crash course in how companies are built, how they grow, and how they execute on strategy. And WiseTech I believe, did it flawlessly. I don't think they could have pulled it off much better back then. Since after the marketing part, I moved into corporate development, saw an opportunity with the M&A strategies that WiseTech had in place, moved back to Europe and helped them acquire companies for the customs land and expand strategy they had, which also went very well, I believe, personally. But I would say that because I worked on it. So
I did pretty well.
Yeah, I did pretty well. We didn't do too bad. It was a very interesting time, and it was something, I don't know, it felt like everything was accelerated, not forcefully so. It just, everything was going so fast. There was so many acquisitions to make that Europe itself is a big place, and they made a number of acquisitions there. You've quickly learned the need for, how to put it, you've got so many different factors that come into play. An acquisition is not just about looking at the numbers. There's a lot of people, I call them spreadsheet jockeys, or they just live for the numbers. They live for the spreadsheets. Things don't make sense if the numbers don't add up. But there's so much more than that. There's cultural aspects. There's how the business actually functions, what the commercials are of that business, and how that would potentially fit with the acquiring party, in this case with WiseTech, and all these things to take into consideration. I call that context. I think context is just as important as the numbers, and without context, you can't truly understand anything. I mean, in logistics especially, you need the context. You can look at some of these companies and their numbers, and it could look great on paper, but when you add context to it, you see that potentially there's no future, or they've actually built something that doesn't make sense, or they're just heading straight for a brick wall. And yeah, I wish we had more context in our industry.
And I know you say that with not just a wistful intent. I think you've had a history of both being involved in helping people to understand context, but also you've got a deep understanding of the context yourself as it relates to things like marketing. Just tell me about the marketing angle, like your exposure through CargoWise, which, as we know, is a dominant feature in the supply chain landscape, and rightly so. I mean, you know, hats off to WiseTech. They have longevity. They've been able to deploy an innovative platform and kept it afloat for many years. It's a difficult thing to do in context, right? And then you've got all these chasers, all these new emerging players who've said a lot of things about what their technology can do. And a requisite part of that is them telling their story. And so we get to this marketing and communications angle, which some people have done well and some people have stumbled on. And you've made a point through LinkedIn and other channels to highlight some of those areas where improvements could be made. Can you just give us your assessment of marketing as it stands, as it relates to supply chain technology? What's the current state at the moment?
I think, as with many things in logistics and logistics technology, standards do not exist in marketing, in logistics and logtech. To put things in context and talk about some experience, when I was working at WiseTech, their success didn't come from extensive marketing efforts or fine-tuned marketing or carefully curated content. It came from trying many different things. Some succeeded, some didn't, but there was always one common element to everything, which was the product. And this is what is most important with the kind of companies that logistics technology providers are targeting, especially if they're looking to the logistics service providers rather than the BCOs and the shippers. They need the product, because you can leading with content's fine. If you do not have the product to back it up, you're in trouble. CargoWise was one of those products that almost sold itself. You just needed to get that message out there in the right way, which I think they did very well. There were even questions back in the day of why the sales and marketing spend at WiseTech was so low compared to other areas and compared to the market, simply because there's no need for expensive sales and marketing spend. That is a myth. And people in sales and marketing are going to hate me for saying this. I mean, I'm in marketing myself, so, you know, I'm putting myself out of a job. But so what? If you've got a great product, you do not need to go and spend all of this money on expensive marketing initiatives that are probably not going to work. And that's the state of things today. So when you look at events, for example, very expensive, do they work? I mean, I know of a lot of companies that organize things like giving away an iPad, put names in a hat with an email address, and then we'll draw one and we'll use that whole database we've got to email people. And everyone just unsubscribes the following week once the draw's been done. And it's one of those cases where they've paid not just for the iPad, but also paid for the event and for participation at the event, which is a huge cost. And they're not getting much out of it because they're going about it the wrong way. They're treating these things as a, let's throw money at it and see what sticks. Or let's go there and spend a lot of money to show how big we are and how great we're doing, when there's no real product, there's no real functionality, there's no real value being delivered, or the message is not showing that value. And that's where CargoWise did really well back in the day. It was getting that value across through their different messages and also providing the value with the product. Do they still do that today? I mean, I've seen a lot of people on LinkedIn reposting CargoWise content, all the same article. And sometimes I scroll through my feed and I've got like six different posts from different people working at WiseTech, and it's exactly the same copy paste. That it maybe they've lost their way, who knows? But there is a way to create real value in marketing in logistics. And unfortunately, the standard, if we want to identify one, is to throw money at things and hope something sticks. And that's a shame.
That's a great observation. And I think, let me know if this is an agreeable statement. It seems as though marketing, as you've described, has lost its way. And we step away from individual brands, but just talk about specific companies across the breadth of supply chain, which is very broad, lots of different segments to consider. But when we think about how a bunch of marketing is achieved or performs today, is it fair to characterize it that it has fallen victim to trying to signal intent versus highlight what real results are being delivered?
I think it's hard to highlight delivering real results if you're not delivering real results. That's the big...
No, but it seems that a lot of these companies can hide behind certain things that have the appearance of results, right?
You can do what you want with numbers at the end of the day. That's how, I mean, sorry to sound crazy or, you know, overly pessimistic about numbers, but you can paint whatever picture you want with numbers. You can disguise numbers. You can use diversion tactics to take attention away from one thing and put it on something else to make a situation look better. And we see all of these things, and we've seen them recently. This year in Q1, we've seen many of these different tactics applied by many different companies to draw attention away from the fact that the product's not real or the numbers are not looking too good or any of these negative situations. A lot of companies right now are communicating to potential investors or potential acquiring parties and not to potential customers. I think easy money, and I say easy money, it's relative, but it was very easy to get funding in recent times. There was a lot of money in our space. There wasn't just all of the entrepreneurs who came in trying to chase and follow on others' success or the ride the hype waves that others brought in. There was also this wave of marketing companies and agencies and podcasts, even we can talk about podcasts as well, coming in and trying to take some of that money that's available to push these companies and get their messages across. But it's a very strange beast. And at the end, the customers, so the forwarders or the carriers or the shippers, the BCOs, they're left with confusing messages, signing up for something that they didn't necessarily need or understand. And that's creating more negative numbers and more disguise and more diversion tactics to try and hide the churn and then hide all of the negative. It's a vicious cycle. I think a lot of these companies that we're seeing do this on a regular, very regularly, they're going to need to stop, go back to product, go back to the basics, figure out what they are trying to deliver to customers, because talking to investors now doesn't make much sense. It's not, we're not getting as many announcements now with investing. So trying to create this content for investors and to raise funding and to look good for the the banks, the investors, whoever, that's not a strategy anymore. You now need to deliver value to your customers or potential customers. So a lot of these companies have got to go back to the drawing board, look at their product and go, right, where did we go wrong? Can we salvage something? Can we actually make something of value? And then how do we get that message across? And I know of a handful in logistics technology that are trying to do this today across different verticals in the space. Some are going about it in a very pragmatic way. Others are panicking and throwing out everything they've been doing and trying all these new initiatives.
Yeah.
2023 is going to be a rough year for some, that's for sure.
Now, do you think, if you think about the trajectory of supply chain technology providers, where they've come from, where they're going, do you think, and not to single them out, but just to use this potentially as an archetypal case, do you think that Flexport's transition in leadership is a symptom, a sort of canary in the coal mine to what's going to happen to the next generation of providers?
Oh, Flexport's an interesting one, Jonathan. Thanks for bringing them up. Flexport, okay. I believe personally that Flexport managed to build a freight forwarding company, but disguise themselves as a tech company to have easier access to money. And the fallback onto being a freight forwarder was like their safety net. So they never managed to pull off the tech side of things. So now they're like, hey, we're a freight forwarder. It's very smart. I don't like what how they did that, but it's very smart. And I take my hat off to the founder over there, Ryan Peterson. I think he's done something very interesting.
Well, I mean, arguably, they dragged in a lot more investment into the space and interest than had ever been in the space before. So, I mean, you've got to...
Well, that's the positive. That's a huge positive for the industry. There's no denying that. And we can only be thankful for the eyes on that the Flexport story has brought. But the... Not conclusion, the next step to their story is quite underwhelming. You have a company come in and they're like, we're going to, you know, save the world, logistics world. We're going to change supply chains. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And you end up in this situation where they're just another forwarder. They're just another big 3PL. Not to belittle forwarding and 3PLs. It's very complicated, but they were promising a lot more and they've under-delivered, in my opinion. The change of leadership comes at a time where they no longer need a charismatic leader who can go to investors and raise money and raise funding and, you know, sell the socks off of Flexport to the people with money. They need a concrete structure in place and people who can make the hard decisions, people who can actually craft that company structure that then works sustainably for the future. Very interesting to see how this plays out. I believe now Flexport's only option, having basically announced that they're a forwarder, they're going to be under increased scrutiny financially. People are going to look at it and go, well, what's going on here? They're going to look at the numbers game is going to be very complicated for them. So they need to make the most of today whilst they've still got a lot of money, whilst they're still in investors' good books, to make some acquisitions. And that's how they're going to deliver on this strategy, because they're very limited. Even though they're a forwarder, they're very limited with their offering now. They're going to need to go out to, you know, low-hanging fruit like Mexico, Latin America, and start making some acquisitions to acquire the functionality they need, to acquire the partner agents, I guess, who you would use. They need to bring that in-house so that they can offer natively a more broader spectrum of destinations and modes and everything. Are they going to do that? I don't know. That's what I think they need to do. If they do that, then great. If they don't, we'll see what's next. Flexport is the gift that keeps giving as well. They keep pivoting and doing things. So it's going to be interesting this year. They need to make moves. They've been quiet so far, but they need to make some moves. And I'm very excited to see what's next for them and for others. Who I will not mention, but who I've mentioned at length on LinkedIn.
I won't mention anyone specifically, but maybe Flexport will release a ChatGPT AI bot to answer customer inquiries.
No, thank you. No? Do you know, no? I was looking into that because I recently posted about that. Very interesting to see. I'm actually happy, and I want to call this out, the leadership team at Expodoc have got a great sense of humor when being called out, and I appreciate that because...
that's important. It's really important.
I've been, you know, I've had worse reactions, let's put it that way. I was reading some articles put out, and even Maersk back in March were talking about, you know, OpenAI, GPT, and how they themselves were thinking about, you know, chatbots and things like that. I was just like, no, it cannot become a standard. We can't turn ChatGPT and OpenAI and all this technology into something as silly as a glorified chatbot. We need, there's so much more potential with this.
So much more potential.
Everyone who knows about this technology, who looks at it, they realize you can use this to completely build apps and solutions and everything. As long as you give it you feed it the right information and you ask it for the right outputs, you can achieve some amazing things. Mm. People are making chatbots, and people are trying to replace customer service, and people are trying, instead of delivering a strong product, a product that's going to warn you when there's an exception, a product that's going to be able to give you the information you need when you need it, or with enough lead time for you to actually act on it proactively and not be reactive, because this is what these solutions are meant to do. This is what, you know, logistics service providers and, you know, data visibility, the tracking, all of this stuff, everyone, we're all there to try and provide a clearer picture and to make sure that those who have requested the goods be moved have enough information to make the right decisions at any part of the chain, right? That's what LSPs need to do. A chatbot means that they've already failed to deliver that with their product. And that's not a good thing. You can't solve a product failing by asking someone to go in and either speak to a chatbot. You can make a vocal one. It's fine. You can have them phone up and actually talk to a robot, whatever. But you can't expect people to go and still have to type something in and get information that they should already have had days before.
But don't you find that fascinating? Because what you've described, if I sort of piece together a few ideas that you've described, you've talked about how it's important, you've shared some of your context, but then you've talked how it's important to understand context. And in supply chains, we both know, multi-layered, there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of different moving parts, a lot of players, a lot of competing interests. There's even nefarious interests. It's an area I'm interested in supply chain security. There's a lot of things that can go wrong really quick at a large scale. And we're seeing, you know, tanker just caught fire in South China Sea just recently. There's lots of things where the wheels can fall off the cart. However, that context has been around for a long time. The technology in the context is not new. You know, we're talking about people who feel like they're reinventing the wheel when it comes to certain types of, you know, electronic transfers of certain bits of information, or, you know, in the case of API access, you know, being able to share information between different, all of that isn't new. And the context has been around since Jesus was a boy. So where's the disconnect there? Is the disconnect because of a lack of understanding from the technology folk, or is the disconnect coming from the actual operational context it gets deployed in? What's happening there?
It's a very interesting question. For me, I've seen... It's not cut and dry. There's not just one reason why these companies are making mistakes or providing something that's not needed. So on one end of things, you've got companies who are literally creating problems to solve them. This makes no sense to me. There's enough problems out there in logistics and the supply chain to not need to do that. Companies come with an idea based on preconceived beliefs or information that is faulty, and they try to push a solution onto customers, either mis-selling it or creating a problem to them through messaging and through conversation that doesn't actually exist in the first place. That is a big part of things, and we've seen that. On the other side, it boils down to poor delivery, having a great idea, having a great, even a great strategy sometimes, and just not being able to deliver on it properly because they can't build the technology, because they don't look to adapt to the processes that companies use. I've always said every freight forwarder is different. I don't believe that there's two freight forwarders that operate the same way, which is one of the reasons why I laugh when people say, oh, half of the top 25 3PLs are on CargoWise. What differentiates them now? Well, technology is not the only differentiator. And I believe that they operate differently. And this is actually quite interesting to talk about today, because DB Schenker, obviously, for Sal. There's been rumors linking DSV to them, but then there's also been talk from people at DB Schenker saying it has to stay German. We, you know, can't sell to the Danes. And it's very interesting to look at this puzzle, because integrating an acquisition like that, there needs to be synergies and similarities, and no two forwarders are identical. DSV managed to pull off the Panalpina move and integrate that quite smartly. I think they did a very good job, but the companies were not identical. So I don't, it's one of those where, looking at these different companies and the way they work, tech companies need to think, okay, it's not a one fit all approach. And even leaders like WiseTech realize that. And I talk about WiseTech because I think they're the only ones in the FMS scene who have got such an expansive partner network. You know, once again, something I contributed to, but But that was a great idea that was put in place before I arrived. They had this strategy, this idea to create this partner network. And they walked away from revenue that they could have got from training and classroom and services. And they created a whole new source of revenue for basically consultants and IT professionals who wanted to get on board with this. And each job that they take on is different. Each implementation that they take on is different. So the logistics technology companies need to be aware of this in the same way that CargoWise were, that you can create one product, which they've done. You can create standardized functionality across that product, which they've also done. No customization, no personalization at that core level. But you need something in place that will help your product adapt to your customers' processes and ways of working, and not try to force your customers to change the way they do things, because that's when there's the most friction, and that's what causes big problems.
Do you think, and again, I don't want this to be attributed to any one person, because my personal observation is that it seems, you know, kind of widespread. Do you think it's fair to say that the issue that we've seen with technology providers can be boiled down to a few different categories? To start with, you've got a misunderstanding of the context of the domain, as in you fundamentally don't understand how it works. And I'd say increasingly there's less people in that bucket, because they've developed an understanding over time, they've read up on it, maybe they've even asked ChatGPT for pointers. So now they've got a fairly good understanding of what's going on. Okay, we can kind of park that one. But then you've got operational execution into a niche, which sounds like a good idea, but never was going to work. So that's one potential area for concern. But then you've got this other area, which, you know, I think is interesting for us to talk about, because I sit in a position involved in influencing part of the narrative for supply chains. You do that through your channels. And my burning desire is to ask authentic questions. And like you've just described, authentic questions need to be asked. So my observation is hubris a big thing here? Are we actually getting technology providers kind of turning around to the domain and to individual customers and saying, oh, that's great that you've got all these needs, let us tell you what you need? We're actually foistering the solution on a customer. Is that been your experience? Is that your observation?
Identifying needs instead of wants is a very difficult thing to do. Customers, you can give them functionality. If they are used to having something specific, and one great example is they have a specific button that does a specific thing, you can simplify that thing. You can automate that thing. You can remove the need for it entirely. If they do not have their button, they're going to be upset because it's a want. Learning to craft your message or to speak to that customer to help them understand that that want is not a need, and they don't need it anymore, is very difficult. what you're talking about and what we're seeing quite often is companies that, and these are usually sales-led companies. I differentiate in technology the companies that are sales-led and the companies that are product-led. I'm a strong right. believer in product-led companies. I'm a strong, and for marketing, I'm a strong believer in leading with content. So lead with product, lead with content. If you do that, you can't go wrong, because if, right. if you fail with product, then you're not going to have a business. So the ones that lead with sales are the ones that tend to make these mistakes, because they will overpromise. They will believe that they can achieve anything because they do not see the product as something, they see it as something they can mold and change to each customer's wants. And right. that's where you get a very complicated picture. And I believe that's what we've seen quite a lot with these newer tech companies, or the heavily funded companies that have needed to justify the funding, that have needed to come up with, you know, the numbers, the logos. The logos is a very funny one. The impact of a logo on a company, some founders and C-level people can go crazy for a logo, and they will talk about it. Oh, we've signed this company. Oh, it's a huge thing. Oh, this is some, hey, did you see we pulled that one up? We got, yeah, cool. You track 2 containers a year for them. Wow, that's yeah. insane. Well done. Yeah, add the logo to your website. That's great. But then if someone asks about it, it's all smoke and mirrors. Oh, we can't really disclose the nature of that relationship, but we're working together with them. Call that whatever you want to call it. And I call it a big load of nothing and smoke and mirrors. And that comes down to the people at the top, in my opinion, leading. I mean, nothing happens in a company without the people making the decisions at the top, giving it the okay. And if it happens multiple times, then it's a strategy. And yeah. that is what you've described with, you know, hubris and being too, having this level of confidence because you've managed to raise a lot of money, or because you're friends with people who are in, you know, high circles, who have got contacts who can then give you more funding, and the way that machine works, and it can really, you know, take someone on a ride, and they can get lost in that. And a few of these companies that raised quite a lot of money got lost in that machine. We've seen it. They lost their way, and they're not delivering, and they even end up blaming customers for their own shortfalls, for their own product failings. Very, very strange behavior. Not something that's going to last, because it's not a sustainable business model.
Yeah.
And I think that that is going to be one of the big catalysts for a change we're going to see in the way logistics works. I do believe we're moving more towards do-it-yourself logistics for the larger BCOs. Maybe even, you know, some of the medium-sized ones. There's things they can do through technology. And as technology keeps improving, there will be more and more they can achieve. Right. And I think that forwarders are going to end up paying the price, especially the smaller forwarders, are going to end up paying the price partly of their own decisions, I guess, to get involved in this market, because it's a crazy market. You don't get involved in logistics unless, you know, you're either crazy or very passionate.
Yeah,
but
it's only one of those two. You didn't mention science. You didn't mention assured career progression.
You're crazy or you're passionate. That's why you get involved in logistics. Crazy or passionate. If you want a career that you're going to have a job for life, because logistics at the end of the day is not going to go anywhere, at least not in my lifetime. There will always be a need for, you know, logistics, supply chain. You can pivot. There's transferable skills. It's amazing. It's exciting. You have a job for life, and I encourage everyone to get involved.
So interesting observations about a broad length and depth of change that's been happening in the industry. Some of that good, some of it bad, some of it ugly. And we've touched on investments that go pear-shaped. We've talked about the potential for overly charismatic founders to make claims that customers don't need. We've talked our way through how software implementations can miss the context. A bunch of things to consider. But what happens to real change in all of that? Don't you kind of feel like it becomes the victim? Like we're all sitting around trying to work out how to transform supply chains. And the conversations we're having seem to be like conversations they had 20 years ago about the same thing, but now it's a bit more shiny and there's a few more pressy buttons that we can use. Is the victim of all these things actual change and transformation?
When a company raises nearly $1 billion, to build something that then delivers much of nothing, and they end up with their back against the wall and having to find someone to buy them out because they're not sustainable. What else could that $1 billion actually have done if it was put in the right hands and put in something truly innovative?
Right.
That's how I think about these things. When I see these companies that have raised a lot of money and they've spent it on non-products, solving non-problems or non-issues, or creating their own problems and their own narratives, it's very painful to watch, because, you know, it's kind of like when you hear people, deGrasse Tyson, who said this, if everyone was working in the sciences, then, you know, we would have solved everything in the world. Like, there would be no more pain, no more problems.
Yeah.
Something like that. So we solve world hunger, we'd solve this, cancer would be gone, everything.
Right.
Very, very interesting. And I think if we were putting, I feel that way about logistics and logistics technology right now, if we were putting money in the right things, if we were focusing on real problems and not trying to over-engineer it, this is one of the things. It feels like there's a lot of over-engineering going on. When we talk about real-time visibility, we're trying to track ships in real time. Makes no sense at all. It, you know, whatever.
It looks like it makes, it's got such a strong argument for looking like it makes sense, but in reality it doesn't, right?
Well, of course it looks like it makes sense because people want to see a dot on a map. I think the whole Uber Eats and immediate delivery and all of this stuff and us tracking things on our phone has also kind of seeped into logistics and freight forwarding, and it's kind of having a negative impact. What I would like to see is a return to fundamentals. I'd like to see a return to looking at product and going, okay, these are the core problems that exist right now. How do we fix these issues? And it can be as simple as creating smart integrations between platforms. It can be as simple as removing this need to control everything and to have a hold on data and being more open and transparent. Our industry is based on trust. Our industry is based on a need to collaborate. Let's encourage those things. Let's build tools that encourage that. But then it's also going to come down to less onus on the tech companies and a bit more on the carriers and things like that. You know, maybe the carriers are going to have to change the way they do things, provide more information, get better at providing data, get better at providing technology that allows companies to understand what the carrier is doing, how they're doing it, and setting better expectations. And I think that that all translates to a return to getting the fundamentals right. Also means standardization and all of these problems, but that takes a lot of collaboration and working together, and no one company can achieve that. And until logistics loses this competitiveness that's created, especially at the moment, it's crazy the amount of companies that have jumped on each individual bandwagon. So you've got Flexport, and then you've got all of the Flexport-esque companies chasing them, and you've got real-time visibility. There's like three or four big players and then loads of little ones appearing doing things. All of these spaces have got so many companies doing the same thing. We need to kind of lose a little bit of that. Not that competitivity is a bad thing, but we need a bit more collaboration and less competitivity for the sake of competition, you know? So yeah. It's going to be an interesting one to see if that happens or not. I think BCOs will push that shift and that change because they're going to start asking for real value. They're going to be the driving factor for sure. They'll be the driving factor. One sad outcome of what we've witnessed with logistics technology is that freight forwarders will end up paying the price of logistics technology's failings. They will, because the forwarders, they can only do as much as their technology allows them, aside from what they do with their people and with their knowledge and their skills. And they've relied on technology to do certain things and try and go above and beyond for their customers. And that technology has failed them multiple times. They're going to end up paying the price for that, because BCOs are going to transition away from using forwarders and try and do things more directly themselves. And software is going to enable that. And the intermediary, the forwarder, is going to end up getting cut out more and more. That's how I see it. So it is a shame. And I think that's why forwarders need to choose the right software providers today as well, so that those software providers help them build a healthy customer base, keep delivering, improve customer experience, And when things start to shift, they will be in a strong position to retain that customer base and to grow, or potentially be acquired by one of the larger companies out there who would be looking to acquire knowledge and know-how in the space.
And I would add, and probably a concluding thought for that comment about freight forwarding, the changing nature of freight forwarding, which could be an entire episode in and of itself. The percentage of tasks which are being automated now has accelerated rapidly. And that's not to say the high-touch, customer-focused exception management is ever going to go away. I think in many instances, a lot of it won't. But it's important, and if freight forwarders are listening along to this, it's important to see a mega trend here as it appears, an undeniable one. And that is most of the functions, and I say most because if you line them all up, you can actually go through the list and you can see emerging technologies creeping at the edges and a lot of them being chomped into quite aggressively. Most of the functions that freight forwarders perform and have performed are being automated. I don't say that with any degree of glee. It's not Schadenfreude there. It's just a stark observation that that middleman function has been, for the most part, superseded with various types of technologies. Now, some of them do them well. Some of them promise a lot and don't deliver. Some of them are in their early stages. Some of them are downright horrible. But that doesn't negate the fact that this trend is occurring. And like you've just articulated, and I think it's really important, the smarter freight forwarders, and I know one that immediately comes to mind, a small Sydney-based forwarder, but when I talked to them, understood this completely and just integrated a bunch of different things into their operations, subsequently have worked their way through ups and downs using technology to augment their workflow. Incredibly forward-thinking forwarder. They need to be, on the whole, more like that. You need to be more adept at thinking, how is technology going to not replace my people, use doom and gloom, those sorts of things, but how is it going to augment my workflow? And I think that's something that needs to be addressed now more than ever.
And it allows people to pivot. Yeah. They can pivot their people onto exception management, like you said, and actually focus on that 20% of things that can't be automated, that 20% of things that really do need a human touch and need the extra attention, and spend more time on that. It's not a problem if they can automate the rest and spend more time on those really important things that do make a difference. That is going to be how these companies survive and thrive. And hopefully more take this plunge towards highly tech-enabled infrastructure, I guess, and strategies. But we cannot, and this is something that comes up often, and it's very important to say, you cannot ignore the human element of logistics and freight forwarding.
No.
These companies that are trying to do that and trying to replace people with chatbots, for example, they're not going to get anywhere.
No.
It is a relationship-based industry, and that is not going to go away.
Yeah, and it's deliberately why my last little soliloquy, I used the word augment and not disrupt or replace. We talk about with great respect because there's certain functions that are just so complex and so much entrenched in exception management and human-centric that automating them is a travesty and would lead to further problems. As a good friend of mine, Rich Mason, says, you won't lose your job. You might lose your old job. And that's a really interesting distinction because you can augment someone's abilities using technology and you can actually do it well to enhance the amount of time they're spending on real and productive things. Hey, put your futurist hat on as we finish the episode. Cast your mind to now plus us talking in 12 months' time, maybe in person, in New Zealand, who knows. What do you see is something that stands out in the future of supply chain technologies that is going to be an undeniable trend or something that people need to undeniably spend time thinking about or integrating into their organizations?
That's a great question again, Jonathan. Wow, it's like you do this for a living.
I do sometimes.
This is, that's a very good question. 12 months, I've got ideas of what won't be around and what will have fell out of favor. However, a trend, it honestly, for example, so if you were to have asked me, you know, something big that's going to stand out in the next 12 months, I'd say real-time visibility is not going to exist in the way that we've known it. That's going to change undeniably because all of the players there are changing. You know, P44 are going to get acquired. Forkite are trying to pivot into deeper supply chain visibility. from the look of their latest announcements. And who else is there? Shipio, they probably need to be bought out as well, because there's no feasible way that they're in any kind of solid financial position, because they've got the same offer as the others. There's some great niche players in that space, though, but that whole space is going to change drastically. And I do believe, well, actually, yeah, this leads in very well. I've been talking quite a bit about customer experience. Customer experience, especially post-COVID, post-pandemic, is something that's a lot more important. It's not just about moving goods now. It's about how the customer is involved in that process of moving goods. They don't just want to know the goods have been moved from A to B. They want to be a part of the process. They want overview of it. They want a feeling of control, and rightly so, because of the way all the things went wrong during the pandemic and all of the bad decisions that were made. I would, opportunistically or not, I was reading about Bed Bath & Beyond, how they're taking a few carriers to court over allegedly didn't respect contracts, allegedly hit them with plenty of surcharges and voluntary or involuntary surcharges. All of these things that happened during the pandemic, we know they happened. And that's created a desire on the shipper side, on the BCO side, to have more control, more visibility, a greater understanding. And for the expectations that are set by the LSPs, the logistics service providers, to actually be met rather than be changed on the fly. And yeah. I think as we transition into more importance of customer experience, there's, you know, once again, there's forwarders that do customer experience very well. There's forwarders that do it very poorly. There's tech companies that create product that enables better customer experience. There's tech companies that say they do, but they don't. As we move into a more customer experience-oriented experience rather than a results-driven, results is important, but the customer experience is now part of that result. That's going to be a key factor, I think, for who's going to survive or not, especially if the industry goes the way it's going this year with, you know, we're talking about a freight recession and all of these things. There's going to be a need for differentiation on that side of things. There's going to be a heavy emphasis on technology. Integrations, I think, is going to be huge. Companies can no longer afford to operate with siloed systems. They're going to have to integrate with their customers' platforms. They're going to have to integrate with their partners. They're going to have to integrate with, you know, whatever regulatory bodies or whoever they need to communicate with. They need to automate data. They need to have access to actionable data, and they need to streamline all of this in a way that it hasn't been done before. And I think that we're going to see a lot more of that as well. That's in 12 months, I think we'll look back and go, yeah, BCOs are trying to make sure that we do not have another like COVID pandemic kind of fallout for them. I think that's what they're trying to guarantee. They're trying to keep away from, because they got hit hard. Right. I almost feel embarrassed as someone who's in the logistics industry, because it's what happened there, that kind of cash grab, gold rush situation. It was great for some companies. It was very bad for everyone else, because it's made the industry look quite bad. We can't do that again, and we shouldn't do that again.
So just kind of wrapping it all together, contextual awareness, which we're talking about a trend here that we should see play out over the next 12 months. Contextual awareness, understand your domain, understand how it works, apply products into that domain in a way which drives operational excellence and business outcomes, profitability for your customers, what they need. So first is understanding. Secondly is to grab that understanding and build things which augment the human experience. Human-centric domain, a lot of things going on that need exception management and sometimes high touch, but they can be complemented by technological offerings. And as you do that in a customer experience-driven way. So if you think about this, just wrapping all those thoughts together, if I understand what I'm doing, if I use appropriate technologies to augment what I'm doing, and I do that by fixating on customer experience, in the next 12 months, my company is probably going to, if you're a technology provider, LSP, or even digitally enabled freight forwarder or a carrier, your company's probably going to be profitable and rise above your peers. Is that a fair conclusion?
I'd say in the next 12 months, your company's probably going to survive. We'll talk about profitability in 12 months' time as the industry gets healthier. But I do. That's a very optimistic outlook, and I do hope that that is the case.
So at the very least, survive, and if you're lucky, you might be one of the small few who thrive. Hey, Anthony, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast this week. It's fantastic to talk with you. I love your insights, and I know many people online and elsewhere do as well. So thanks for your time, and we'll catch up, definitely catch up again soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that concludes our second episode of Technologies in Supply Chain, episode 2 down, 8 to go. What amazing insights shared there by Anthony, and there's more to come. We'll interview industry leaders, including some major brands, some of the top tier brands in the world over the next couple of episodes. So stay tuned for more. Join us on social media or in other channels. And if you've got a question or you'd like to appear on the show, get in contact with me through LinkedIn or elsewhere. I'm Jonathan Kempe. Thanks for joining us on Let's Talk Supply Chain, Asia Pacific.